As I said during the Watts riot, even at its worst, there were 4,000 people involved. Well, that's less than 1% of the Negro population of Los Angeles. And the average Negro citizen in 1965 in Watts was in his house with his doors and windows closed because he was frightened of what was going on.
National Educational Television presents City Makers, a series of conversations on the urban dilemma in America, recorded on the campus of Brandeis University, January 9th, 1969. Dr. Kenneth Clark, City Makers host, and Larry Allison of the Long Beach Press-Telegram talk with Sam Yorty, mayor of Los Angeles, the country's fastest growing city.
You mentioned Watts, and there was a time when Los Angeles was, the image of Los Angeles was sort of dominated by the glamour of Hollywood and movie stars and the affluence of America. Since 1965, it seems to me that Los Angeles, that image is somewhat balanced by the image of Watts. Has there been any significant changes in the problems of Watts since the riot?
Yes, of course, there have been tremendous changes. But before I discuss that, I would like to say that Watts is not what the Easterners think it is. Watts is a name that's been given to a much bigger area than Watts itself, which is a very small area. But it is an area of small homes and churches and schools. It is absolutely nothing like Eastern slums and tenements. And when these Eastern writers who've been writing about Watts come out there and see it, some of them sort of gasp because it's
as a Western writer in the East, would you sort of would you
nothing
this
like
is absolutely
they thought.
True. Yeah. Watts is not a slum problem at all. Yeah. It's a you have all the classic problems of a ghetto, except
it's not a material
slum housing
slum
situation.
Problem. What about a psychological slum?
Psychologically, the problem would be.
Psychologically, I think only as a I would say a ghetto problem, not a slum problem. In the way that ghetto has come to be accepted as a place where only one color people or one ethnic group live. And in that sense, it is. But from the standpoint of many of the other problems, it's entirely different. Now, in 1964, the National Urban League took a survey of all the big cities, and I was very proud when it came out because Los Angeles was really way ahead of the other big cities as far as a good life for the Negro citizens was concerned. We were rated the best big city in the United States. Now, right after 1964, you remember Dr. King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference began their drive for what we accepted in Los Angeles, for instance, the right to vote. I can remember when I was conducting voter registration drives in the Negro or black area, some of the people prefer to call it. I couldn't understand why they wouldn't vote because they were in my district and as a congressman, and I wanted them to get out and vote. And a present congressman, but not then, Augustus Hawkins, said to me one day, he said, well, Sam, the reason you can't get them registered is they think there's a poll tax. He said, they don't know that California doesn't have a poll tax. So while Dr. King was demonstrating for the right to go to the polls and the vote in his section of the country, we were conducting voter drives. But our people were watching on television what was going on
in the South,
in some southern cities. And they were watching dogs chasing peaceful demonstrators. They were watching cow prods, and they had a couple of sheriffs who were built up as the villain, and they were watching them. And it created a highly agitational atmosphere. So
is this your idea of the cause of the Watts?
Well, I think it was a major factor, yes, I do, because I myself felt very agitated watching what I saw on TV. And I don't subscribe to all of Dr. Marshall McLuhan's theories, but I do think that his idea that this television is what he calls a cool medium that involves you and you're part of this action, I think that's true. And I believe it that it did set the stage for what happened in Los Angeles.
When Charles Evers visited Los Angeles and was talking about his problems in Mississippi, registering voters and so forth, the young black militants in Los Angeles didn't quite relate with him because Charles Evers, of course, has a good deal of antagonism toward people like Stokely.
But weren't there some realistic problems having to do with the conditions of life of the Negroes in Watts, which contributed to
yes,
the
Dr. Clark.
Yes.
The same conditions that have existed for the Negro citizen throughout the nation for a very long time. I mean, the feeling
economic
of,
discrimination.
Well, the feeling and the definite discrimination, yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you got to remember that we're different also from some other cities and that we're growing so fast. And we estimate that about 2,000 new citizens a month come into the city, and that, I mean, more than that, but that many from the southern
areas. Is your
Negro
population growing at a faster
about
rate?
About 2,000 a month. Out of about 1,000 a week is our growth rate now, that we estimate. We don't have any Census Bureau borderline, but this is the best estimate we can make. And, of course, these people, I'm sure, came with great hopes and felt that they could easily get a job and the conditions would be much better for them. And they do come in through Watts as a sort of a corridor and then disperse into other areas, but certainly there were great frustrations, and there was a higher unemployment rate. There still is.
One thing that I noticed when I visit Los Angeles, and particularly in the Watts area, is that there has been precious little rebuilding of the devastation of the 65 riot at Watts. Is that deliberate, or are we just waiting for...
It's not deliberate from the standpoint of city policy. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been easy to get all the people together on a redevelopment plan. As I pointed out to you, we set aside some area for industry to bring jobs there. This was turned unacceptable. We had to redo the plan and leave out industry and so forth. But I am really happy that we finally have a Watts redevelopment plan that's been accepted by the people. We held meetings in the area, we had committees, and the vast majority are now for the plan, and it will go forward from here on. But you don't rebuild an area in a year or two.
One of the first things, even before the Watts disturbance, that called my attention to the fact that maybe Los Angeles was not to be understood just in terms of Hollywood and glamour, was the fact that the police and the black Muslims, I remember when Malcolm X was alive, there was an incident between the Los Angeles police and the black Muslims. More recently, the Black Panthers and the police seem to be having a sort of a set-to in Los Angeles, not unlike a few other cities. Is this an ongoing problem of police and black militants?
There's a problem between police and the extreme black militants, because the extreme black militants would create the problem if it didn't exist anyway.
Now, they say that the police create it.
Yes, but... I know what they are doing, and some of them have been infiltrated by groups that are using them and manipulating them. You've got a lot of Maoists, anarchists, and all kinds of people working on the Panthers. They are arming themselves. In some cases, we know they have arsenals. They are making threats against policemen. They have people that are agitating them. And they give a completely distorted view of the black citizen of Los Angeles. That is, the Black Panthers in Los Angeles. Because, as I said during the Watts riot, even at its worst, there were 4,000 people involved. Well, that's less than 1% of the Negro population of Los Angeles. The average Negro citizen in 1965 in Watts was in his house with his doors and windows closed because he was frightened of what was going on.
Well, recently, Mayor Yorty, you stated that student disruptions in general were largely to blame or largely instigated by communists and communist front organizations.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I said that the communists had infiltrated the student movement, particularly like the SDS.
Well, don't you feel, though,
they admitted that they accept communists, and...
You think the same is true of the extreme black militants?
Well, I know to some extent it is. Mm-hmm. I know of some cases where they have been infiltrated, and if you look at where some of their leaders go, they go to Havana, they go to Hanoi, they don't go to Saigon. Some of them, of course, have held meetings with the North Vietnamese and the so-called Viet Cong in other parts of the world. And I think we'd be pretty naive not to think that the communists want to influence them, if
sorry,
they can.
Sorry, I think I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking, though, that if the danger of pinning the communist tag on student disruptions in general, don't you think that tends to obscure some of the issues these people want to raise?
No, I don't think so. I think you have to discuss issues as issues. And I think where young people who don't understand that they're being manipulated by subversive forces, I think when you bring it out in the open and they know it, then they have a better chance themselves to put the whole thing in perspective. Now,
it seems to me that simply characterizing these movements as communist or even
associating them... Well, now, wait a minute. I want to stop you right there, because I haven't done that. And this is the old tactic that they used against Senator McCarthy because he went to such extremes. I want to put this in absolute perspective. I said that communists were infiltrating these groups and that they were trying to use them and manipulate them. And I think that is true. And I named the people and I used their pictures and I showed pictures of them at various agitational type meetings.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would question that, especially the way you phrased it,
yeah.
Trying to manipulate. But as I recall, you made one statement about the Century Plaza demonstration. And weren't there something like 10,000 people there that day protesting President Johnson's visit?
Oh, I don't know how many people. I've forgotten the number, but they weren't all there protesting President Johnson's visit.
No,
either.
No, there were a number
of
different reasons.
Just
the war,
curiosity
Vietnam,
seekers. And we have pictures of identified communists at that meeting, and we know that some of them did
well,
planning
that was the
in
point
advance.
I was
and
make,
of course,
though,
they want a confrontation, you see.
Well, those few, but the
yeah.
point is, I think you specified that 17 were identified.
Well,
wasn't that the number you used?
I don't remember the exact number. It's probably true. If that's what I said in the statement, it was carefully researched and it was true.
Mayor Alioto of San Francisco has said that, for example, he believes in using firmness when there's violence or lawbreaking, mm-hmm. but at the same time that the city and police should go out of their way to give a platform for dissidents to air their views. And for example, in issues like issuing permits for marches and demonstrations, that the city should be lenient to the point almost of permissiveness. So that does give you a contrast.
This is closer to the Lindsay Lindsay image.
I don't try to compare my method of administration with any other mayor. I have my own problems. And I think Los Angeles is the governmental machinery is running smoothly, I would say much more smoothly than, say, New York. But these things don't happen accidentally. We have certain labor programs and other matters that we think are working, at least we hope so. As far as contact with the black community, ever since I've been mayor, I've had not only important commissioners from the black community who are in contact, but also on my own staff, I have people. And for instance, not too long ago, we had a police raid on a Muslim temple. And this was reminiscent of the conflict several years ago that you mentioned, Doctor. I had a member of my staff in contact with the Muslim minister. And he had agreed that the police could come into the temple the next morning. And so they went on in at night, and they didn't find the arms cache that was supposed to be there. I think myself, somebody gave us malicious information for a purpose. Well, because I had contact with the Muslim minister, I simply called up and apologized to him. And he accepted the apology, and that settled that. So this is the way I operate. I do have contact. I don't try to be flamboyant and make a grandstand play out of everything, because I think that soon wears itself out and wears off. But I think you have to keep working all the time. Now,
in my look at urban problems, though, I try not to concentrate on the dramatic incidents, to try to find out what are some of the underlying mm-hmm. problems that occasionally erupt in these dramatic incidents. We've already talked a little about housing, but it is interesting to me that in the Los Angeles area, one of the differences which any knowledgeable mm-hmm. observer immediately sees is that there are not the large public housing projects.
We've got a new plan in Los Angeles. It's very novel. And I wouldn't want to claim great success for it because it's experimental. But we have a plan to build townhouses, which would mean that there will not be over 10 units, or perhaps 12, on two lots, which would roughly be 100 feet frontage by about 150 feet in depth. And these will not be all in one place. There'll be only, as a matter of fact, one in a block. And even people on welfare under certain circumstances can own their own townhouse. They do it by paying 20% of their income, no matter how they get their income. And they will have a place to live that is suitable for them. They will have, for instance, enough bedrooms and accommodations. But they will be in areas where the schools are established, where the churches, the parks, and so forth. They won't be put off by themselves. And the children will play with the children in the area who are not all on welfare and who are not all frustrated and suffering these miserable conditions. Now, I don't know if this will work, but we
certainly
call it...
Certainly is another or
well,
somewhat novel
approach. Well, I tell you what, I'm praying it will work. My idea has always been, and you mentioned earlier about the problem I had before Senator Ribicoff and when Senator Kennedy was president. Actually, Senator Kennedy got too much blame for that. The meanest things were said by Senator Ribicoff, who said Los Angeles doesn't amount to a darn and all that. That wasn't Senator Kennedy who said that. All people think it was Ribicoff. But I had said to them that I thought one of the problems in housing was that in the white communities, they don't fear what I would call integration. They fear inundation. They've been told and they believe that if one Negro family comes in, that the whole area is going to go black right away, and they feel threatened by it.
Do they feel the same way about a Mexican-American family in your...
Some would, yes. But I feel the answer is what I call the salt and pepper thing. I think we should, for instance, I recommended that committee that if an apartment owner would say rent 10% or 20% of his apartments to minority people, that then he couldn't be charged with unfair practices. And I felt in this way that an apartment owner, a man of good faith, who does not believe in segregation and discrimination, could then say to his other tenants, now I'm going to rent a certain number of apartments to minority people, but that's all. So don't move out, stay here and see if we can't make this work. But I didn't get that across to them at all. Because then the extremists will say, well, that's not fair, you should rent 100%, you see, and they make a political issue out of it.
It's recently come to my attention that you have been interested in not only urban affairs, but foreign affairs. And one specific bit of information which I received that I'd like to check with you is that you were interested in a post in the Nixon administration, specifically the Department of Defense. Is that correct?
Well, I certainly would have liked to be Secretary of Defense, but I'm a Democrat and I did not support Nixon.
Oh, I thought you had.
No, I didn't take any stand in the race, so he couldn't put a Democrat who didn't support him into that position. But this was just speculation. People asked me what I would take, and I said if I had a choice, which I don't have and I'm not going to have, I would take that because I have been interested in foreign affairs and defense all of my adult life.
It is interesting that we're exploring areas of foreign affairs and matters of defense with the mayor of a city, and it is unusual that a mayor would have been as much involved in...
Well, if a mayor comes out completely for the Doves, as, for instance, I think Mr. Lindsay did. I know he made a statement that the young people should join the resistance to the draft or something. In most of the press, that's very acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take a different point of view, then they say, well, what's he know about it? America should stay out of foreign affairs. So most of them judge by their own point of view.
The Los Angeles Times seemed to be one of your most vigorous and persistent political adversaries. What's happening in that area?
Well, they've fought me for years. Yeah. They did endorse me for re-election in 1965, I think because the business community found the other candidate, Jimmy Roosevelt, completely unacceptable. But with that exception, they have fought me ever since 1936 when I first ran for office.
Do you think that the LA's attack, the Los Angeles Times attack on you, has in any way influenced your political success in the future?
Well, it has hurt because I've had the problem with a few commissioners who, a couple were actually convicted of...
The Harbor Commission.
Yeah, they were convicted of accepting some used furniture 7 months after they voted on a contract. It was a very good contract for the city. But this sort of thing has been blown up out of all proportion. It isn't anything like happened in New York, for instance, where, you know, one of Lindsay's close friends was appointed to a job and took a payoff from the mafia and so forth. We haven't had that kind of thing. I've had some commissioners I appointed who have been disappointments, and I've fired them. I had one who was convicted of bribery, and I said it was a legal lynching. He shouldn't have even been indicted.
You're talking about Watson?
I'm talking about Harbor Watson. Commissioner. It was very unfair, and the judge, after the man had been through the trial, after the judge refused to dismiss the case, after the prosecution had completed its case, after all that, then the judge granted a new trial and dismissed it. There's a serious trial of a councilman and a commissioner that I appointed, but who kind of began to work with the council instead of with the mayor. And I started that inquiry myself. It resulted from my call to the police department and the district attorney, and the Times doesn't point this out. I would say that the young publisher of the Times is there not on merit. He's there because the family owns the newspaper. And he not only wants to run the paper because of his great wealth, I think he would also like to run the city. And they did have a mayor in the past that would kowtow to them. But I would rather not be in office than be a stooge for the Los Angeles Times.
Well, of course, there's nobody here to present the Times' side of that argument.
Well,
actually,
listen, they present it every day, and they don't present my side, I'll tell you.
One of your other very well-publicized views was with the Kennedys, particularly Bobby Kennedy. How is that in regard to, say, the present senator? Do you have any kind of relations with Ted Kennedy?
No, I don't really. I'd have to say I really don't know Ted Kennedy. People seem to have a little different attitude toward him than they do the Senator Robert Kennedy. I think he's probably less abrasive and moves more smoothly in the Senate than perhaps among the population. I didn't really know Senator Robert Kennedy very well. We had met each other, and I think at the Senate hearing, some of the young people around him passing him notes caused him to say some things that he probably wouldn't have said if he'd had time to think about it. And actually, from then on, we began to sort of joke about each other, and it was sort of a good-natured thing.
Yes.
And I used to kid about him, and I enjoyed his quips about me. In Los Angeles, we would have liked to have supplied him with much more protection than his staff would let us give him. This is a policy of theirs. They didn't want a lot of policemen around. And they'd had trouble in Fresno over the same matter. We wanted to give him more protection. He would not, I don't say that he, but his staff did not accept it. But about the last thing Senator Kennedy said was a joke about me. You know, he said that, "I think we should go now. Mariotti thinks we've been here too long already."
Mariotti, and I'm sure Mary Ellison will join me in trying to extract from you as much as you would want to tell us about your own political future. We know that you are going to run for mayor again, and I assume that you will be making some special efforts to get the kind of backing from the minority communities which you had in your first. What do you see beyond this in terms of your own political aspirations in the future?
Well, I really don't know. I first have to get the mayoralty race over with.
Yes.
And I expect to have considerable backing in the minority communities this time. I was defeated by Governor Pat Brown in the Democratic primary for governor, mainly by the minority people who voted 10-1 against me at that time, although I would say, and I wish Pat were here to defend his own record, that I've done much more for minority people than he has, but I have to run a police department, and we had real problems, and there was great agitation against Chief William Parker, and this reflected on me. But I believe that has changed.
Well, as a matter of fact, when you were elected for the first time in 1961, you had very strong support in the minority groups.
Well, as a matter of fact, not just in 65, all my life I've had strong minority support. You must remember that I represented the Negro area of Los Angeles in Congress. And that's why I say I was involved in voter registration.
Same area that Hawkins now represents?
Yes. It's been changed and gerrymandered. But it was the Hawkins area. He was an assemblyman in my congressional district. And then the district was gerrymandered, and it became the district where Jimmy Roosevelt ran and got elected when I didn't run for re-election. So I've had strong minority support all my life, and the only time where that I know of I've ever had a real defeat in the minority area was in that gubernatorial primary.
But of course, in 1965, the support dropped, and the 40% you mentioned was a decline in support in the minority community.
Well, I wouldn't say that it was, because after all, the Roosevelt name among the black population is a pretty big name.
I would agree.
And I felt I did pretty well against Jimmy, who was their own congressman, their own area, with the problems that I had with the police department enforcing law and everything. I thought that 40% showed quite an awareness on the part of the Negro citizens of the fact that I had always been a friend.
Given your unusual closeness with the Republican Nixon administration for being a Democrat, what do you expect from the Nixon administration in the area of urban affairs, health, education, and welfare?
I have a feeling that Mr. Romney will do all right there. I think he has been a good administrator, and that is an extremely important department. And I expect to get help from him. At least I certainly hope so. Now, as far as health, education, and welfare, Mr. Finch,
yes.
Even before taking office,
yes.
He has said that he thinks welfare payments must be uniform throughout the nation.
Yes.
So this is a hopeful sign for a city like
Los Angeles. Intend to give support to Larry's belief that some seemingly daring or imaginative proposals, which one in a stereotyped notion of Republican conservatism would not expect to come from this administration, might.
But, Doctor, again, you know, really, people in public office, most of them, confront a problem and do what they have to do. And it doesn't make much difference what they've said during the campaign. It's, for instance, our governor in California, Ronald Reagan, I'm sure that he thought he could cut taxes. And yet, after he got elected, he gave us the biggest tax increase in the history of any state in the union. And I'm sure he didn't want to do that, but he was confronted with facts. And sometimes
you seem very compassionate for Republicans.
Well, I'm compassionate for all people in public office, because I know what their problems are. And you're faced with facts, not theories. And you have to find solutions to them. And I think sometimes, if you haven't had much experience in government, and you don't know a great deal about it, it's probably easier for you in a campaign, because you can make outrageous promises and you think you can keep them.
I think that's an excellent note on which to thank you for a very enlightening discussion. And thank you very much, Larry Ellison.
Thank you.
On this program, Dr. Kenneth Clark, host, and Larry Ellison talked with Mayor Sam Yorty of Los Angeles, California.